In this next segment of the show, we are going to turn our attention once again to the race for the District 2 trustee seat for Napa Valley College. And joining us right now in studio is the challenger in that race, Jeff Dodd. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Barry. It's really fun to be here.
Glad to have you. So let's get started. I'd like to begin with the assumption that people listening don't know anything about you. So introduce yourself to the audience.
Yeah, well, my name is Jeff Dodd, and I am indeed running for the Napa Valley College Board of Trustees, Area 2. The district includes, it's mostly central Napa, so I'd throw in downtown Napa, Old Town Napa, the Alphabet Streets, then going north to Napa High School, basically up to Pueblo, and then move over kind of the eastern area of the city over in Alta Heights, and then just a little bit of Coombsville, pretty much everything west of First Ave.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
You grew up here?
Yeah, well, yeah, you do. Not just hearing about the district, you want to hear about me too, huh? Born and raised here in Napa. This race is very meaningful to me. Not only was I born and raised here, but and college being in my hometown, but I was a student at Napa Valley College, so helped me out tremendously. Really set my academic footing, my foundation. As we're 18-year-old, 19-year-old boys, we need a little time to mature and find our own way. And so Napa Valley College was definitely it for me. I really developed my writing skills. And so that's really important to what I do right now. I'm an attorney. So, we write a lot as an attorney. So that was very good skills to have for me. But really helped me set my academic foundation going on, allowed me to transfer to University of California, Santa Barbara, where I did very well. Subsequently to that, I was able to go on and go to law school at McGeorge School of Law in Sacramento, finishing my top of my class at McGeorge Law. And then I've been practicing environmental law for about 5 years before starting my private practice. I was able to work for the California Supreme Court Chief Justice, Tani Kantil Sakaue. So I had a wonderful experience. And like I said, I really look back at where I am right now. I've been practicing for about 5 years, going on to my 6th year. And I look, so what I was talking about, setting that academic foundation, I really look fondly upon that to Napa Valley College.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. So I guess the question that belongs with all of these races that are a lot of work for really very little financial benefit.
Yeah, there's no financial benefit.
Yeah. Yes. So the question obviously is why? Why would you want to run for a trustee seat?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think for me it was like I was saying, Napa Valley College gave me so much, and so I really want to give back to students. I mean, everything that I want to do is focused towards students. I mean, students that were just like me wanting to maybe transfer on to a 4-year school. But then there's numerous students there that don't want to or don't need to go on to a 4-year school, looking for a 2-year accreditation or a 2-year AA degree or some sort of certification. So really, everything I'm doing is wanting to make sure that students are able to meet their goals, whether or not, there's someone, like I was saying, someone me wanting to transfer on to a 4-year school, or like my 91-year-old grandma who's taking weightlifting classes at Napa Valley College. I mean, the college is so diverse, and in recognition of that, I mean, everything I want to do is just geared towards students, helping students meet their goals, making sure that the college has the programs that we need to really satisfy all of the different constituencies and groups in our community.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're challenging the incumbent in this trustee district, Amy Martinson. She was on the show yesterday, and we got to talk with her. Usually when someone challenges an incumbent, particularly in, like we say, what used to be a very low-profile race like this, there's some motivating factor. So is there a motivating factor that got you into this race?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially I started going to the board meetings about a year ago. The Register put out an article saying that the college was going to start talking about student housing. And so I was saying, I'm an attorney and I do, land use, environmental law, water law, anything dealing with, dirt and water is kind of what I do. And I was like, I can maybe participate in this discussion, help foster that. I mean, I look at myself and where I am as a student right now. And while I was at the college, very lucky to live with my folks. So, not having to pay for living expenses or anything like that. But then pretty much when I transferred on to UC Santa Barbara and then, of course, law school, I'm on my own. And so I look back at all my, you know, I'm in, you know, just to be totally honest, I'm in still six figures of student debt, which is, you know, look, I've got a good job and I'm able to pay it off, but that's a lot of money going out the door every single month. But I look back on that student debt, and I was on academic scholarship too while I was in law school. All of that was related to living expenses. And then so I'm talking with students right now, and they're taking out $10,000, $20,000 loans, not for tuition or not for books, but really just to live while they're able to go to school. And they're still working too. So anyways, getting back to that, so I saw the Register was putting out they put out an article that the college is going to start talking about student housing. So I said, hey, I can go in and participate and add to this discussion. So I started going to the meetings. And there wasn't really a lot of momentum behind this subject. And then I started seeing the way this kind of the dialogue at the board, and it didn't seem as really as progressive and as forthright. I didn't feel that certain constituencies and points of view were being represented. I mean, it's someone, you know, just out of school myself, I mean, pretty much I feel like I'm just out of school, out of law school, and a younger perspective, you know, someone being in their 30s and knows what it's like to have student debt, and to share that perspective as a recent student. So going into that and hearing that voice wasn't really being represented, that constituency wasn't being representative, I thought it was a good time to throw my hat in the ring.
Mm-hmm. Very good. The sort of I don't know, the elephant in the room, I think, on this particular race is that it's become very contentious. There are a lot of things being said, accusations being made of both directions, not necessarily by yourself, but you know, in the process of campaigning,
sure. Yeah.
Letter writing to the newspaper, and you know, people are very entrenched in positions around this. And again, this all comes as kind of a shock to me, because it used to be school board and college trustee races were, you know, nobody even knew who was running, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, you know what I mean? A very small group of people were paying attention to that. The general public had no engagement. It seems like a whole different world.
Yeah.
How do you account for that? Is this the national political mood, the partisanship of the national mood, that's bleeding over into what used to be nonpartisan electioneering in a small town like this?
I think it is a little bit of that. It's a you know, politics has become so much more contentious. I think, you know, I try not to say anything negative or disparaging about the person I'm running against, but this person I'm running against, I don't necessarily feel that they really have been the right step direction in terms of consensus building. I mean, to give you any sort of indication, there's seven trustees on the college board, and five of them have endorsed my campaign, and one of them's not endorsing anybody in the race. So just kind of give you, which is really unprecedented in itself, to have somebody running for as an incumbent not being able to be supported by any of their colleagues. And so it just kind of gives you a little bit of a sense of the dynamic and the dialogue, or the lack thereof, on the college board right now. I mean, going into this, I had absolutely no idea that it was going to get this crazy. I mean, if my wife, who I had to, you know, really talk to a lot about, you know, jumping into this thing. Because when you're volunteering, you're basically volunteering your spouse as well. So both need to be on. But if she had known that it was going to be like this, maybe if I had known it was going to be like this, I you know, it's tough to say what we would have done when we decided to do this a few months ago. But yeah, it's been unreal. But what has been really cool about it, and really uplifting about it, is that it's a lot of passion and energy behind the college. And so I think ultimately whatever happens at the college, I think it will, you know, people will be interested in what's going on in terms of that discussion, and things going on at the college, and the community getting behind it.
There's been there was a span of time, and I couldn't identify when it began or when or if it's ended, but it seemed like there was, I'm not sure turmoil is the right word, but a lot of unsettled conditions at the college. I think part of that came from Chris McCarthy passing away unexpectedly, and you know, there was no succession plan. It can't be a succession plan for something like that, right? And so that threw the college into kind of a, you know, a little bit of disarray for a while. And then the bond measures that were put forward became pretty contentious. There was a lot of pushback for the Taxpayers Association and so on around the bond measures. Had you followed the track of the college during that period of time, and what would you say about that period and where the college itself is and the Board of Trustees are now?
Yeah, I did follow. I was involved with the college and helped actually worked with Dr. McCarthy in 2000. No, it was 2009, so a year, I think, before he passed. Worked with him on some campaign work for the college. So worked with him, and yes, he was absolutely – I mean, he was saintly. I mean, especially to the fact he was a former faculty member himself and was well-respected by the faculty. And we're talking about the college as an overall political body. I mean, the faculty in terms of, you know, political weight and respect is certainly at the very top in terms of constituencies at the college, not diminishing anybody else, or especially the students, of course. But faculty carried a whole lot of weight. And so, Dr. McCarthy was certainly on the top of that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. When, you know, he passed away, you had subsequent presidents of the college, superintendents of the college, really doing some things, pushing the limits, and doing so without really communicating with faculty. And when you're, you know, doing so, you can't do anything, you know, in any position that you have, where it's the business world or the public world, you can't do anything shoulder lifting everything yourselves. You need to consensus build. Like, there's a lot of different constituencies, even at the, you know, tiny Napa Valley College, there's a lot of different constituencies in there. And so it's important to bring everybody together. And so ultimately, you know, when they went out for the bond in 2014, all the constituencies weren't together, including the faculty and including the students. And when you're trying to push something where, you know, it's a tax measure, right? And so naturally, there's always going to be people skeptic of it. But when you don't have your own internal constituencies and your own team playing on the, you know, and pushing the ball in the same direction, you're going to find a lot of trouble. But I think it's been incredibly good experience, I think, for Dr. Kraft, the current president of the college, to go through that, because he was ultimately leading that, you know, in his first year or two, pushing that and having to face that. But I think he learned a tremendous amount for it. And I also think faculty learned exactly from it and learned what kind of person that he was, what type of leader he was, being able to respond to difficult issues, but being able to get buy-in from the faculty and the administrators and the staff and, of course, the students as well. So mm-hmm. All in all, I think the college is really growing tremendously from that.
Is there a process of not just Napa Valley College, but probably a lot of two-year colleges having to refigure who they are and what they represent in a community these days? The cost of four-year schools has gotten so outrageous. I know people are, I'm sure, looking at their options differently, both students and young people coming out of high schools, parents wanting to help their kids. You know, how do we make this work without six-figure student loan debt?
Hopefully.
You know, it's kind of disturbing to hear that a student at Napa Valley College would have $10,000 or $20,000 in debt to look at. You know, community college wasn't supposed to result in that.
No.
So to what degree is that important going forward in your mind as sort of the assessment of how the college fits into the community and how the college fits into the rest of the academic world and all of that discussion?
Yeah, no, I think the college, a community college specifically, needs to constantly be evolving. I mean, the college needs to be very sensitive to what's going on and to the local business world, what's going on with the local workforce and local workforce trends, so they can really be responsive to those trends and those movements, so they can train the students for those trends and to really capitalize on those opportunities out there. So college definitely needs to be responsive, needs to be swift on its, nimble on its feet, you know. So along with that, I mean, there's challenges, though, in the same regard, though, right? If you need to be nimble on your feet and need to move, and, you know, a certain issue that the college faces is it doesn't really have the ability to provide really the types of facilities and the technology, right? If we're trying to train students for 21st century jobs, but they're learning on 20th century equipment. So that's, a community college struggle when it comes to funding, is dealing with those challenges, because, you know, the college's classrooms and workspaces all need to be updated. So if we're really talking about trying to educate students and trying to train students for, you know, 21st century jobs, they need to have the tools to be able to do so successfully.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular area that you think the college is lacking in that regard?
Well, no, I think there's rooms for improvement. I mean, first of all, I'd say the college is doing a tremendous job, but there's always, you know, just because you're first or whatever, the best at what you do, doesn't mean that you should always challenge us. It's always kind of challenging your own incumbency, always trying to improve what you can do. But the vineyard and winery technology program is a great example, right? So there's obviously a tremendous need for those types of training because of where we are in the middle of the heart of Napa Valley, heart of wine country, but the facilities are somewhat small, and there's, you know, if students want to come here, people want to work here, people want to train, they want to join into this workforce, they're good jobs, and so in response to that, you know, the college and the foundation board is doing, you know, a lot of fundraising to expand those facilities, to expand those programs, to improve the winery and vineyard equipment that's on the property so students can learn and be up to date with modern standards.
We're talking here with Jeff Dodd, who is the challenger in the District 2 race for Napa Valley College Board of Trustees. We're going to take a break. We have news coming up at the top of the hour. Before we get to that, we'll check on traffic and weather for you, and then we'll return after the news break and have a few more minutes with Jeff Dodd. Stay tuned for more here on the KVON Morning Show.
If you run your own business, when you're not on the job, you're on the road. In your van. Signs that say detour and do not enter are just plain bad for business. Well, here's a sign that's great for business. It says 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance on Mercedes-Benz Sprinter or Metris vans. With pioneering safety technologies and low total cost of ownership, Mercedes-Benz vans are the right choice for your business. Check out the full lineup of Mercedes-Benz vans starting at just $25,995. 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance. That's van power for all. Mercedes-Benz. Vans. Born to run.
Starting ad price for first to base model Metris worker cargo van. Excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Please see your dealer or go to mvvans.com for further details and exclusions.
Contact Todd and the commercial vans team at Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield. 707-430-0273.
At Redwood Credit Union, we deliver banking that helps you focus on today and plan for tomorrow. Because achieving success takes working together. So we offer solutions to make your life easier, like free checking with rewards, affordable loans and credit cards, and convenient anytime access. It's banking with great value, from here for you. Because this community is our home, too. Redwood Credit Union, for all that you love. Federally insured by NCUA.
In California, there's no stopping traffic. Semis passing over here. Motorcycles over there. Tailgaters everywhere. And up there, a guy who's driving like he's never seen rain before. But at Nissan, we build our cars with Nissan Intelligent Mobility. Inside the first ever Nissan Kicks, technology is designed around you, like standard automatic emergency braking that can help you stop and avoid a frontal collision here, here, and here, helping you get a handle on the unexpected. But no matter how much tech we put in our cars, we'll always keep you in the driver's seat. The first ever Nissan Kicks, starting at just $17,990. Now the most exciting tech you own is in your driveway.
Availability of features varies by vehicle model year, model, trim level, packaging, and options. Automatic emergency braking cannot prevent all collisions and may not provide warning or braking in all conditions. Drivers should monitor traffic conditions and brake as needed to prevent collisions. See owner's manual for safety information. $17,990 starting MSRP excludes tax, title, license, and destination charge. Dealer sets actual price.
Noted author, former chief medical correspondent, and Salon Pass user, Dr. Bob Arnott.
The human body has billions of pain receptors. Block those receptors with the anesthetics found in Salon Pass Lidocaine Plus, and you'll have relief. Salon Pass Lidocaine Plus contains two anesthetics, including the maximum strength lidocaine available without a prescription. They numb aggravated nerves for effective, lasting relief. For relief, try what I use, Salon Pass Lidocaine Plus.
In the silver box with the blue wave.
Start your weekends off right with me, Hank Hardister, on The Grind, the show where I cover comedy and entertainment. I get to interview amazing comedians and people in the entertainment business, from Sacramento all the way down to Hollywood. Don't miss it. We have lots of laughs. We joke around. It's a blast. Every Saturday at 8 o'clock on 1440 KDON.
Checking out the markets here as we head to the top of the hour. We're holding on to some gains on Wall Street so far today. The Dow is up about half of a percentage point. The S&P is up a quarter of a point. And the NASDAQ just a fractional gain so far today. But green numbers are better than red numbers, I guess. So we'll say that's a good outcome so far this morning. On the traffic beat, traffic collision reported now. This is westbound 80 at Leisure Town Road. Looks to be a non-injury accident in that vicinity. A little bit earlier, we were telling you about a accident, Highway 12 at North Kelly. It looks like maybe that's been cleared already, no longer on the screen. So no delays expected in that vicinity. Weather-wise, high today around 79 degrees, pleasantly warm, but the story is going to be wind later on today. Winds are going to kick up, and that's generated a red flag warning for areas over 1,000 feet in elevation particularly. It's going to be windy everywhere, but more so over those higher peaks. So do be careful with anything that might get a spark, because we're in a high fire danger status through 6 a.m. tomorrow. You're up to date on weather, traffic, and the markets, and the news is next.
We are KVON Napa.
This is Barry Martin. Join me weekdays for the KVON Morning Show.
This is a sports report with Ira C. Smith.
KVON Napa, 1440 a.m.
Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, October the 30th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Sarah Sanders says President Trump will stay on the attack. Also on the Tuesday rundown, a U.S. House committee questions rising pregnancy-related deaths. Plus, we'll tell you about an early childhood program that gives parents tools to educate. First, our top story, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says President Trump will continue to fight back against people who speak out against him. The Huffington Post reports that comes even after a number of his high-profile critics were the intended targets of explosive devices last week. At her first press conference since early this month, reporters pressed Sanders to speak about the connection some people have made between the president vilifying the media and his political opponents and a Trump supporter attempting to mail bombs to several of his targets. The Post notes that a CNN reporter asked Sanders whether she thinks Trump's regular use of the term enemy of the American people to describe the media should be reserved for actual enemies of the U.S. Sanders replied the president's not referencing all media. He's talking about the growing amount of fake news that exists in the country, and the president is calling that out. The Huffington Post adds that she sidestepped follow-up questions as to whether Trump considered CNN to be fake news and the true enemy of the people, something he tweeted earlier on Monday. Congress is asking U.S. healthcare systems why more women are dying from pregnancy-related complications, and North Carolina could have some solutions.
The House Ways and Means Committee wants answers from the country's largest hospital systems with a November 15th deadline. Advocates for maternal care welcome the query but question its depth since it doesn't address disparities between white women and women of color. Monica Simpson, with the reproductive rights group Sister Song, explains North Carolina's approach to closing the racial equity gap for new mothers.
It was really about how people are treated, what access they have, and how we need to address racism in all facets of our lives, including our healthcare system.
In 2004, pregnancy-related deaths for black women in North Carolina were 5 times higher than those of white women. But since then, the state has been able to reduce the mortality rate by 40%. This is Antoinette Kerr reporting.
Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris have proposed bills to improve health and pregnancy outcomes by giving federal dollars to states that adopt similar maternal code models. And with the midterm just a week away, polls show health care is one of the voters' biggest concerns. More from Suzanne Potter.
A recent poll from the Kaiser Family Foundation found that 27% of those polled named health care as the top issue candidates should address, second only to corruption in Washington at 30%. Harry Orchard, a small businessman from Clayton, Missouri, says the Affordable Care Act should be perfected, not eliminated, as Republicans in Congress have voted to do dozens of times.
My personal political belief is that health care is not a privilege, it's a right. And the ACA went a long way to fixing a very broken system.
Missouri is one of 14 states that refused to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, and its uninsured rate stands at 9%, which is higher than many states that did expand the program. The Show Me State's Republican State Attorney General, Josh Hawley, is one of 20 GOP state officials suing to end the ACA by declaring it unconstitutional. He is now running for U.S. Senate and has called the ACA a failed policy that curbs people's freedoms.
South Dakota currently has only 7 individuals who are certified to assist those who report a sexual assault, but a new training program has been launched to boost that number.
Those who are certified have completed the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner, or SANE, program. Carrie Sanderson directs the State Center for Prevention of Child Maltreatment. She says a federal grant is allowing the center to partner with the South Dakota Department of Health to train additional examiners and design sexual assault evidence collection kits to be distributed statewide.
For us to help the victims of sexual assault in our state, we need to have medical professionals who are trained to appropriately handle the scenario and the situation so that you don't re-victimize the person when they come in.
Because South Dakota's 2 metropolitan areas are on either end of the state, certified examiners are currently near Sioux Falls or Rapid City, leaving sexual assault victims in the state's central, less populated area with fewer resources. I'm Roz Brown.
Nationwide, it's known that Native American women and children have high rates of sexual assault violence, higher than any other population. Finally, Eric Tegenoff reports a free workshop in Idaho is helping parents prepare their kids for school. It's filling a much-needed gap in the Gem State.
Idaho is one of 5 states that doesn't invest in preschool, and only 30% of kids in the state are enrolled in a preschool program. When it's time for kindergarten, about half of kids have grade-level reading skills. The Ready for Kindergarten program set parents up with the skills to prepare their kids for school after 3 workshops. Ruth Kaunan is a retired teacher who volunteers with Ready for Kindergarten.
What it does is it trains the families to be their child's first and most important teacher. We know that they spend a lot more time with their children than we do as educators. And so this gives them the tools and the training and actually the toys and activities and things to do with them.
The program, run by the Idaho Association for the Education of Young Children, helps the parents of kids up to age 5 develop social-emotional, pre-literacy, and pre-math skills in age-appropriate ways.
For those in the state, Boise will be holding a workshop on November the 5th. More workshops will be held at Garfield and Taft Elementary Schools at the end of November. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet my friend Bernie.
Running for Napa City Council, 2017 Veteran of the Year.
Community, Marine, family. Bernie will add a voice to Napa, which is over 39% Hispanic. Bernie's family moved here and didn't know the language or the culture.
Through the opportunities of this great country, we were able to overcome that hardship. When 9/11 happened, I decided to join the Marines and fight for my country.
2017 Latino Business Leader of the Year.
Join me as we fix the Napa housing crisis.
Bernie personally knows the housing issues we are facing. A leader we can trust.
Join me. Vote for Bernie Narvaez for Napa City Council. FPP number 1397119.
Paid for by the Narvaez for Napa Council.
The Army National Guard is committed to keeping the country safe and our community secure. Composed of hundreds of thousands of citizen soldiers from all walks of life, the Guard is always ready to respond to local or national emergencies. We protect the homeland. We're always there when called upon, and in every state and territory, we stand guard for our communities. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the California Army National Guard. Aired by the California Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to 1440 KVON, the voice of Napa Valley. Here's your host, Barry Martin.
And we're back at 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. Let's update the traffic and market numbers for you. First of all, on the traffic file, we've had little problems popping up and then going away pretty quickly so far today. Most of the trouble right now seems to be in Contra Costa and Marin counties. For Napa, Sonoma, and Solano, there's really nothing new working, so low impact. Any problems that you might encounter. No big delays out there. On the markets so far today, it's been an up day on all of the major indices. The Dow's up about almost one percentage point, 224 points right now. The S&P's up 0.6, as is the NASDAQ. And so all is well for the market traders so far today. Weather forecast, we're looking at another pleasant day, a little more than seasonably warm, with a high reaching about 79. And then tomorrow, 82 probably for a high, about the same on Thursday, and then back down to about 80 degrees Friday and Saturday. Right now, however, we have a red flag warning to be aware of, and that continues through 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Winds are going to start kicking up out of the north during the daytime today and continue through the evening. Gusts may be up to 28 miles an hour, says the National Weather Service. And the higher fire danger, of course, is over the peaks, northeastern Napa County, up around the Lake and Yolo County lines, the Contra Costa area, eastern Bay Hills, also an area of concern for today and tonight. But it should be just about another 20 hours or so, and the winds will taper down, and we'll be back into a safer condition. But do be extra careful with any fire danger issues out there today. 8:10, you're up to date on the basics, and we turn our attention once again back to the Napa Valley College Board of Trustees race in District 2. Yesterday, we spoke with incumbent Amy Martinson. Today, we're talking with the challenger in that race, Jeff Dodd, who's here with me in studio this morning. You mentioned getting involved and interested in the housing idea for Napa Valley College campus. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? How, if housing were to become part of the college's plans, how would it work? Who would it be for, and who would build it, and all those kind of questions?
Yes, no, it's a good question. That's what when I'm talking about student housing, not going out and knocking on doors and talking with voters, people ask the exact same question. And actually, my position is that's basically step 5, 6, and 7, but we're really at step 1 right now. And so I think really, how does it work? How does it work right now? I think one, we need to be engaging students. I started talking about all these different constituencies of the college, of faculty, the staff, administrators, and students, of course. So there's all these people that we need to talk to, let alone the actual larger community of Napa itself and those political bodies of those communities. But we need to start talking with students, really. So what is affordable, right? Because if it's not, if this campus housing, this idea of campus housing is not affordable, then it's not really, I think, in the cards. I mean, it really defeats the purpose. If we're talking about market rate housing, I'm not interested in that at all. This is not really a money-making venture for the college. It shouldn't be. Everything that we're doing is really directing towards students, supporting students. I mean, the longer students, there's numerous studies that I could point to, the longer students are able to stay on campus and be involved and stay, close to the home base, they're able to do better in school and be able to, get out and transfer and so on and so forth. So getting back to this, really the step one. So it's really engaging, surveying students, surveying faculty. Would you even be interested in this, right? I don't know. If students saying, no, I'm not interested in housing on campus, then once again, we need to take a step back. But what it is really, it's aggressively, though, pursuing that process, because I do think that there is interest. I mean, right now there's been a few studies which are unique to community colleges, nationwide for community colleges and then also state, but found that 40% of community college students did not feel that they had a secure place to live. Hmm. I mean, and the same thing goes to having a secure food source. So if we're talking about student success, we can't expect students to go on and succeed and meet their goals if they're not able to feel comfortable and have a place to sleep tonight or something to eat. I mean, these are just really basic necessities. So I think we can all understand that. But then also, solely need to consider that we have students, they're here, they're working, and they're spending 50 to 70% of their paychecks on rent. I mean, for those that aren't living with their parents, like I said, I was lucky enough to live with my folks when I was going to the college, and so that really helped me, and a lot of students are lucky enough to be in that same position, but there's many students that are not, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in light of the fact that, you know, if you're spending 50%, just at least 50% of your paycheck, that means you need to take a couple extra shifts. And that means you're staying longer in school. You're no longer transferring to a UC or a state school in 2 years. You're 3, 4, and even 5 years. And so life happens in that time, right? And so people, because life happens, we're not able to meet that people, students aren't able to meet their goals and they get sidetracked. Like I said, just life happens. So these are all kind of really unique things and factors that we need to consider, but understand what does it mean to be affordable, and then is there a need? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there certainly is a certain need that we should account for, that you have 30% of the college students commuting in from Solano County. So that's, you know, another kind of factor that leads me to believe that, you know, there would be some sort of need. I don't know about the size, right, or how big this would be. But then you also have lots of students that want to come here and work. I mean, Napa is not only a desirable place for tourists, but it's also a desirable place to live, study, and work. I mean, this is a great place to live. People want to come here and work. And when you're talking about the community college being the local workforce training center, the central hub of workforce training for our community, you know, that might make a lot of sense, too, as a reason to have campus housing. But also the community college, Napa College, they have the land. I mean, there's certain areas that you would need to stay away from because it's proximity to the river. There's certain flooding concerns and you want to be cautious of. But there are areas that are really viable and I think it can work. And what's the really cool part about it is, you know, we could really build this, the actual place of Napa Valley College. Community colleges that don't have housing, and which is very much the norm for community colleges not to have housing, but they're all naturally commuter campuses, and so they're just empty at night, right? And people are there to take a couple of classes, and then they leave and they go back home. But there's no energy and kind of personality, and I think actually that could be really important to developing the college and really helping out students in the long run, mm-hmm. and the community in the long run as well.
Sort of the same planning theory with downtowns. If you have people living in downtowns, they're more vital than if everybody goes home at night.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this idea focused on dormitories or apartments or
that's a great question. That's a great question because that when I'm talking about engaging, because community college students, they're a little more diverse than a freshman at a community college is maybe a little different than a freshman at, let's just say, Berkeley or something like that. You know, people could be going to school for the first time, 25 years old, and have a child, right? So there's that kind of diverse aspect of a community college student population that we need to take account of. So yeah, it could be some dormitories. It could be maybe more of like what you would consider a graduate school type of housing, where you could live with a partner, live with maybe a child, or it could be a mix of the two. I mean, I was talking about engaging faculty. Maybe faculty would be really interested in it, right? We're able to, you know, obviously the same for reasons that, you know, it's tough to live here for a student. It's also tough here to live here for faculty. So you have a lot of faculty members commuting from Solano County, Contra Costa County, I know. Mm-hmm. And so, but if we're able to attract good faculty, this is also another way that we can really support students. So, yeah, I can't say this is what it's going to be, because we really need to engage different constituencies and talk with people. Really, what is the need, and also in the same regard, what is affordable. I think it's really complex because there's so many diverse constituencies, and this is a big problem. I really feel that I can, you know, I feel myself as very much a consensus builder, being able to talk, but more importantly than talking is actually just listening.
Mm-hmm. Now, be the devil's advocate for a moment. Some who support your opponent, the incumbent in this race, are suggesting that your work with development is a negative for you to be a trustee, because you might be bringing development interests to the college. Is there any foundation behind that? Is anybody talking about for-profit development on the college campus?
No. I mean, any type where it would benefit me, I think I bring a unique aspect. I mean, I work for both. I've worked for governments and I've worked for developers. I've worked for people because of one or two projects I've worked on. I'm naturally a development attorney. I've worked on a diverse array and have, you know, hundreds of different clients, from small little nonprofits, you know, grandma and grandpa trying to build an accessory dwelling unit, to do whatnot. But no, I think I'm uniquely actually insightful on these types of issues, right? And can be, you know, understand really what is going to be certain problems and things worth paying attention to understand and ask the right questions. I mean, we're not doing this for our own, you know, financial benefit. I'm not getting into our financial, when it comes down to it, everything I'm doing is towards students. So if something is going to, you know, where we're trying to make money off students and charge them, like I was saying, market rent for a living, that's totally insane to me. That's something I would never support, right? Because it doesn't deliver the objectives and the goals of what I'm trying to seek for a community college, you know, housing type of program.
Mm-hmm. The idea that we talked about a little bit earlier of partisanship getting involved in this race, there's also been accusations, I guess is the best way to put it, that your family, because of your father and his political career and his position, that there's some effort to create, as someone has termed it, the Dodd dynasty. I'm sure you're familiar with that. with that line of thinking. How do you speak to that?
I think it is absolutely ridiculous. I think it's – I mean, you look at everybody in my family. We love to help. We love to work for the community. I mean, same thing with you, Barry. I mean, you're involved. You're out there serving the community, whether or not it's, you know, nonprofits or volunteering for this event or volunteering for that event. We're out there. I mean, that's something that my, you know, grandparents always taught us. It's very, very important to be involved in the community. So, I mean, I'm on Connolly Ranch Education Center, their board of directors, Napa County Community Health Initiative. I'm on their board of directors and kind of serve as their, you know, in-house legal counsel, so to speak. But, you know, I've served on various, you know, local boards, Napa County Parks and Open Space District Advisory Committee, Ag Protection Advisory Committee. So it's all about giving back. It's all about participating. And I mean, it's obviously we're doing it for the community, but we've also find it really rewarding to give back to the community in this way. And it's something that we're, you know, proud of doing. So, whether it's a college board or some, you know, local nonprofit board, we really like to help out mm-hmm. where we can.
Just about out of time. Why don't you give us a little bit of a summary, what you're talking to people about when you're out knocking on doors and what people are saying to you about priorities and why you think people should vote for you.
Yeah, so we have an election that hopefully everybody knows about that's coming up November 6th. Everybody should have their ballot. Everybody is a vote-by-mail voter. You do not need to have any sort of postage or anything like that, which I think it's good for people hopefully we'll drive up our local turnout numbers. But I am probably – actually, I'm not on the very bottom of the ballot. In terms of what's going on, I'm running for District 2, Napa Valley College Board, which is mostly central Napa. I think my big priority is everything I'm doing is directed towards students. If we're not talking about students and students are not in the first and foremost the priority and whatever objective or whatever initiative that we're talking about, I'm not interested in it. I mean, everything that we're doing. But I think there's a lot of areas that we can also benefit students and benefit the community as well, sort of double benefits. I do think student housing, talking about that, having that discussion is very, very important. I wouldn't say it's my first priority of any means, but I think, you know, in light of the community's housing shortage and students' need for what I believe students need is for housing, that's certainly a benefit. I think supporting the local college's workforce training programs, apprenticeships, there's a double benefit there. Not only are we educating students for 21st century jobs and giving them these are good jobs, setting totally changing these students' lives, setting them on a different career trajectory, Career trajectory can have tremendous benefit. It not only benefits the students, but benefits the students' families, but then also our small businesses who need skilled workforce. Our businesses are actually where they should be really thriving right now. Some are hurting because they just really can't attract the number of quality employees that they need. So those are really just a few examples. But when it comes down to it, first and foremost, focusing on students. And I'd hope to have your support. Jeff Dodd for Napa Valley College Board. If you'd like to learn more, my website is jeffdodd.info, not .com, we're at .info, jeffdodd.info, and would love to have your support. Barry, thank you very much for having me, too.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in today. And best of luck when Election Day rolls around. It's now 8:24. Let's take a little break here. We'll come back and resume our KVON morning show after this.
Your imagination and our possibilities are limitless at 707 Embroidery Zone. We are your local promotional product company offering more than embroidery, from screen printed apparel, vinyl signs, to a wide range of promotional products. At 707 Embroidery Zone, we provide our customers with the highest quality products and excellent customer service. Visit the new 707 Embroidery Zone showroom at the Napa Valley Commons to see and touch samples, or visit our website at embzone.com. That's embzone.com.
You trust doctors? Doctors trust us. Not every health plan can claim it was created by doctors. You know, the ones who can literally save your life? Western Health Advantage was founded by doctors, which means we do things the right way for the right reasons. We care about the health of each of our members, providing access to quality health care when you need it, because we know your life truly does depend on it. For more information, go to choosewha.com. Western Health Advantage. Advantage you.
The A&W in St. Helena is now serving fresh baked blueberry and cranberry orange scones for breakfast. Or try a signature buttermilk biscuit with sausage gravy or a half-pound breakfast burrito with a variety of hot or iced coffee drinks. Breakfast is served hot, fast, and fresh Monday through Friday, 6 to 11 a.m. and on Saturday and Sunday, 7 to 11 a.m. Stop by for a delicious quick breakfast only available at your local A&W in St. Helena.
Prices may vary. Tax extra.
Hi, I'm Lisa Edelstein. Every day on set, I help my fictional doctors save the lives of imaginary patients in the TV series House. Every day in his village in Ethiopia, Barasa Ware helps save the lives of real children as a local health worker. Like many children in the developing world, the ones in Barasa's village are threatened by common illnesses that kill millions worldwide. But unlike villages without a local health worker, the children of Barasa's village get the care they need to survive. Imagine how many more children could be saved with your help. When you help local health workers like Barasa, you help children survive all over the world. See where the good goes at goodgoes.org and find out all the ways you can help the good go further. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
And we're back. It's 8:27 here at KVON. A good morning to you. It is Tuesday, October 30th. I did want to point out that earlier in the show, I was promoting the interview with Jeff Dodd for 8 o'clock hour. And if you didn't tune in until then, I apologize. I had the wrong time on my notes. It was scheduled for 7:30 all along, but I had it written down wrong. What can I say? So if you missed a portion of that and would like to hear all of it, we'll get today's interview with Jeff Dodd and yesterday's interview with Amy Martinson uploaded to our website sometime today, and you'll have a chance to listen to both again or for the first time if you missed yesterday or part of today. Probably by, I don't know, mid-afternoon or maybe sooner, we'll have those available via kvon.com. A lot of our morning show segments are uploaded to the website, made into podcasts, so you can make that a resource if you want to find something that you heard about but didn't get a chance to hear, or if you got distracted during an interview. That's why we're making those available. And you can share those links with friends and say, hey, check out what was happening on KVON. We'd appreciate that. In fact, spread the word about our live and local content here on 1440, which now extends all the way until 12 noon on weekdays. Did you know that? Got local programming from 6 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. And, for example, what day is it today? Tuesday? That means that the Napa Valley Show with Judd Finkelstein comes along in the 9 o'clock hour. On the Wine Road replay at 10 o'clock with Jeff Davis. And then it's the replay of the Farmer's Fresh Hour following that at 11 o'clock. That's our Tuesday lineup. All that good stuff is coming your way here today on 1440, where it's now 8:29, heading into the bottom of the hour news and sports here for you next. And it seems like a quick check on the markets might be worthwhile once again as we get there. The volatility of late has me inclined to click over and see what's going on Wall Street a little more often than I typically would. Dow Jones 30 Industrials up 227 points currently, 9-tenths of a percentage point. The S&P and the NASDAQ are both up around 7-tenths of a percentage point. So earlier gains are holding, and we've made it through 2 hours of trading without any wild ride so far today. 44 degrees is the current temperature. That's going to start warming up pretty quickly here. Sun's out. And we're going to get up to about 79 for a high today. And again, don't forget that red flag warning that's in effect through 6 o'clock tomorrow. Winds are going to pick up as the day goes on, most noticeable over the higher elevations. And anywhere outdoors in the dry conditions that we have now, chance of fire is really severe. So be extra careful. If you don't need to run your lawnmower on a rocky hillside today, it's probably a good idea to skip it. Save that for another time. 8:30 now here at KVON. Let's check the news.
I'm Nate Campbell, updating you on some stories we are following in the KVON newsroom, and we start with some latest figures on the rebuild after the October 17 fires. Supervisor Belia Ramos.
When you look at the number of homes lost, 653, certainly it is small in comparison to our neighbors to the west, Sonoma County, but that does represent 26 years worth of new construction here in Napa County for our annual averages. When you look at who's rebuilding and where we're at, we're about 25% committed by those who lost homes. 25% have submitted an application or received a permit to rebuild.
Ramos says as of last week, the county has issued 101 permits for rebuild. From the North Bay Business Journal, as it nears the end of its sixth decade, Redwood Credit Union is preparing for future growth with a Southern Napa Valley facility. Over time, the plan would be able to accommodate up to 700 employees. Redwood, at the end of last year, purchased a 20,000 square foot building at 1190 Airport Boulevard in Napa Valley Gateway Business Park and 8 acres of undeveloped land next to it. And in Sonoma, while the Sebastiani Theater Foundation continues to raise funds for renovations that will help the iconic theater meet federal Americans with Disabilities Act requirements, theater officials say that last week they lobbied the Sonoma City Council for an extension to their lease agreement. Napa in the North Bay, you are up to date. I'm Nate Campbell. That's the news. Your Napa Valley and North Bay News is brought to you by Computer Engineering Group. They can fix your broken screen on your iPhone or Samsung. CEG also repairs Apples or PCs in-store or at your home. They even provide IT services for your business. Call 833-CEG-9701.
It's San Jose Sharks hockey tonight. This is a sports report with Ira C. Smith. The Sharks are home to the New York Rangers tonight.